Today on the Rising Coaches podcast.
And I made the comment that I don't think Luka Doncic has ever been more athletic than the guy guarding him. And Adam chuckled and was like, that might actually be accurate, but Luka has the ability to always maintain options. And so like if people will say like, oh, so-and-so is really good at creating space. Well, I think everybody can create space. It's just, what do you do with that space once you've created it? Somebody like Steph Curry or Trae Young, players that just have such a quick trigger and can shoot it from anywhere, as soon as they have space, as a defender, you're in trouble.
Hello, and welcome to the Rising Coaches podcast. My name is Brian Bender, and I'm your host. Our podcast today is sponsored by Dr. Dish. Dr. Dish is by far the best shooting machine on the market. And if you want a new machine and want a discount off your new machine, just mention Rising Coaches and you'll save up to $300. For more information, visit drdishbasketball.com or visit one of their social media platforms at Dr. Dish B-Ball. Also, if you're not already a member or interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, we'd love to have you be a member of Rising Coaches. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have content that you will not get anywhere else, develop your craft, expand your network, and have job opportunities that you may not see on any other website. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com. We got a special guest today, a good friend of mine, one of the best trainers out there that you may not even know about, but Reed Osi is our guest today. Reed, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Coach. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So give us a little introduction. I know you've done some amazing things in your career. You started off at the college coaching ranks and kind of evolved into your own space as an entrepreneur and started your own company. And, you know, you train some of the best pros and help out with a lot of high school and college kids. Just tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got to where you are today.
Well, thanks. It's been an interesting journey. If you would have told me 10 years ago that this is what I would be doing today, I would have thought that you were crazy. I never thought that I would go down the entrepreneurial road. I was super passionate about college coaching and taking that route. I've always been a super highly motivated person. And so when I had the opportunity to step on the floor, sit on the bench at a college program, I was super excited about that. I love the idea of working hard. I grew up on a farm, small town. So that like grinder mindset was nothing new. I've watched my dad, my grandpa every single day show up. And so college coaching was something that fit well with kind of my pedigree. And I had the opportunity to coach at four different schools in 7 years. And then, in 2014, kind of took a leap of faith. My now wife was working in reality TV in New York City. And I was coaching Minnesota State Moorhead Division II program in Minnesota. And we had just won like the first conference championship in 32 years, I believe. Things were going really well. But I'm from Minnesota. My family had just moved to Ohio. And my wife's having meetings with, I'm like, hey, what are you doing today? We got Rob Gronkowski and Nick Lachey and people like that coming through the office. And I'm sitting in the office drinking Diet Mountain Dew, watching film. And so kind of figured that that was the best route to go to New York. Trusted my gut, ended up working in the player development space out there. And it took off and have now been back in Minnesota going on 5 years and just super fortunate to be doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, quite the journey there. And, you know, reality TV, I'm sure you've heard plenty of stories and different things, you know, from your wife and moving, you know, a farm boy from the Minnesota area all the way to New York City. I'm sure that was quite the adjustment. But I agree with you totally with, you know, the grind, the word grind. I kind of don't love that word in basketball, because if you have a passion for something, like regardless of what it is and you love something, you're going to work for it. And grind almost seems like it's a rough word at times, but oh, it's a grind. Well, we choose this life, and you know, you making that decision to move and do different things, I think is awesome. And you gambled on yourself, and it's definitely worked. You know, that farmer mindset, you know, growing that blue collar type mentality, you know, that the work that we put in and the hours that we put in behind the scenes, anybody that leaves the coaching industry, you have found has had tremendous success because they know how to work. And it's a skill that is very hard to understand and to utilize. So tell us a little bit about your business, you know, Basketball Catalyst, the Catalyst Training, your playbook app, you know, a lot of different products that you have developed and used, and how you utilize those, and kind of explain your journey back, how you got back to the Midwest.
Yeah. So, you know, I love the mission statement, you know, of Rising Coaches and what you guys are about. And it falls pretty much directly in line with what I'm trying to do in terms of, you know, I feel very fortunate that I had a ton of really good mentors along the way. I think that mentorship is super important. I think it's almost the most important thing that a young coach or even a young professional can have in their life, is find somebody that mentors you. And so I was really fortunate enough to learn from some of the best in the world from a coaching standpoint, but then getting to New York and working with DJ Sackman, who I believe is the best on the planet. He's just phenomenal, and getting to work with a lot of different people. I want to take that knowledge and help coaches. You know, I worked in the player development space, and so I spent a lot of time working with individuals or small groups or even teams, but just had a conversation last night with a youth director of, you know, I work with gave the example of Eastridge High School, which Kendall Brown playing at Baylor right now as a freshman. He played at Eastridge. Ben Carlson plays at Wisconsin. It's a really, you know, big high school program. And I've worked with them for 4 years, but I said, you know, I worked with them this fall in 20 sessions. I spent 20 hours with them. I said, their high school program is going to spend, you know, 12 to 14 hours with them in a week. So in a year, I'm going to spend 20 hours with them. Now, we can still do a ton of work in those 20 hours, but ultimately my goal is to teach the players how to help train themselves, but then also teach the coaches, because those are the people that are going to be on the floor with the players for the majority of the time. And so I view myself in that capacity as like an extension of the coaching staff, where we're trying to figure out, hey, what are you guys trying to accomplish in a short amount of time? How can I help assist that? And then ultimately, can we teach the coaches, so that, because they're the ones that are the most valuable pieces here, because they're spending the most amount of time. And so from that standpoint, obviously I get to be on the court with them. I have, you know, work with the company called Playbook, with the Playbook app, to have online training programs for, try to be as cheap as we can to provide high quality training options for kids, but then also have some other coaches tutorials and different programs on my website, just from drill work to different concepts, going over things to help train coaches, and ultimately have, I think we'd have the greatest impact that way by getting to the coaches. I've said this, you know, if I could work with one player, they might like it and they tell their friend, and then you get a second player, you get a third player. But if I get one coach, I get 40 players. We get to impact the most people that way. And so that's really been a passion of mine, is not only helping kids get better, but helping coaches help kids get better in the long run.
Yeah, there's some really good stuff you talked about there. And, you know, working with, you know, players come and go, you know, players get, their careers can be over in a minute, but coaches, you know, we're in it for longevity. And a lot of us are, you know, coaching not only for a couple of years, but turns into decades and, you know, a lifetime of it. But bringing in outside people into your program, I think, especially as a coach, it helps you become a better coach. It helps your players learn in a different way or learn something. And then you have all those rules too at the Minnesota level, especially where they only get so many hours or they only get so much time with those. And same thing at the Division III level. Like, there's only so much time that you're allowed to spend with them. And I think that player development side sometimes gets looked over. Talk a little bit about that. No, as a player development guy, but you have a coaching background. Not everyone has a coaching background into player development, or vice versa. Talk a little bit about, you know, what are some mistakes that coaches make that you've kind of realized now that you're on this side, or vice versa? What are some things that have really given you the advantage or an unfair advantage in terms of your player development philosophies and things, having been a coach already?
Well, I'll tell you this. When I first started in 2014 doing the player development stuff, I thought it was going to be super easy. You know, my dad was a high school coach. So I've spent about, almost 33 years old. I spent every day in the gym since about third grade. And I thought, man, you know, this is going to be easy. And then the detailed part of me started questioning, because I question everything, not just like, okay, why? I gotta know why. I have to know purpose. And I started watching like Steph Curry. And now this is like really when Steph's starting to come on the scene at the NBA level. And I'm fascinated, because I really think that in NBA standards, he's a mediocre athlete. Like, he's not like, you know, he's not faster than most guys. He doesn't jump higher, but what he's doing, he's just manipulating guys and he's killing guys. And then I start watching guys like Joe Johnson and Paul Pierce. Like, Paul Pierce is 52 years old and he scored 27 points last night. How did he do it? And I started watching the details, and I just started watching the game in a different sense. And what I started to realize is that coaching and training, there's a lot of similarities, but there's also a lot of differences. And I started thinking about my time as a college coach, that we had so many responsibilities. Like, we're working on offensive and defensive concepts, your systems, your schemes, recruiting, managing player emotions. Like, there's so much that goes into that, that you're trying to be as efficient as possible. Well, it's really difficult for a coach to get the proper amount of time from a skill development standpoint when you have all these other team concepts, because it's a team game. And so what I started realizing there is that I think a lot of that gets kind of left out, pushed to the side, because we place more value on some of those team concepts. And I totally get that, because I was in that space. I'm like, oh yeah, great, we got these skilled players and they have no idea how to play together, we're gonna get smacked. And so you're trying to focus on those things. And then ultimately, you know, my mindset with this is try to be as efficient as possible. I use the analogy, or you know, the visual of, you can chop down a tree with an axe and there's no problem with that, but it goes a lot faster with a chainsaw. A chainsaw is going to be much more efficient than an axe. I think about my player development stuff that I did as a college coach. Good Lord, I should have been fired. Like, some of the stuff that I did was so inefficient. Like, I'd be in charge of post players. I'd have seven guys standing on the baseline. We're like, I'd get guys like six reps in 15 minutes. I start thinking about some of the stuff that I was doing, because we didn't spend any time thinking or talking about it, because we were so focused on recruiting and what we were going to do, you know, scouting reports, all these things, that we were like, oh shoot, we probably should, you know, have a 15 minute skill segment in here, just figure it out. And so that's where I'm like, okay, can I help coaches be more efficient and jam as much skill content into those 15 minute segments? Because I'm acknowledging that if, you know, you guys get late in the year, you guys are tired, you guys are beat up, you're not trying to have a 2-hour practice where you come in and do skill stuff for an hour. It's like, how do we be as efficient as possible, get as many reps up, and get out?
Give us kind of an example of what you're kind of getting at there. So, you know, a lot of coaches think in this mindset, there's a preseason or a summer, and then there's like a postseason. And during those times, yeah, we focus a lot on a player development, maybe playing some pickup, our lifting, our conditioning and such. But then during the season, you know, practice is meant for team and, you know, putting in our concepts on offense and defense. And yeah, like you said, we might get 10 or 15 minutes of post perimeter shooting, or, you know, 5 minutes of ball handling plus a warm up drill. And you do some build ups with one-on-one and different things, but, you know, a lot of time is spent on team. So what are some things that coaches can do or should be doing to maximize those 10 to 15 minutes, instead of saying, oh yeah, we're going to do post perimeter shooting, they hard hedge the ball screen, so we're just going to work on that?
Yeah. Well, I try to take as many different concepts and jam them into that segment. And so I think you have game situation, but then you also have game characteristics. And so I think that we sometimes get trapped in this idea that everything has to be game situation. And I think that's good. I think players need to understand game situation, but we should also think about characteristics. So if you have a post player, we want to work on maybe a little bit of ball handling for them. And so we would think, hey, this post player is going to spend their time maybe at the block and the dunker spot, at the elbow, you know, pinch post areas, whatnot. We get so focused on where they're going to be that the skill stuff kind of gets lost. So one of the examples that I would do is I'd maybe put a post player at the elbow and I would incorporate some ball handling into a movement, into a specific finish, rather than just have a guy flash to the block, catch it, make a move and score, and then go stand in line. It's like, can we incorporate a ball handling segment into this? Maybe can we incorporate a ball handling segment? Maybe he's at the elbow and he makes two stationary moves, makes a pass, flashes to the block, catches and scores. So now we have ball handling, we have passing, we have a hard cut to the block, and we're scoring. So you not only have the finishing component, which is the most important, but you're getting guys loose. They're repping out different actions that, you know, understand what I'm saying? Like, how can we, instead of just, hey, go stand at the elbow, and when it's your rep, cut, you know, across 45 degree angle, cut to the block, catch it and finish. Like, can we incorporate? Yeah. Are you ever going to have a post player stand at the elbow and take two dribbles, dribble between the legs, and then throw a hook pass over the top? Probably not. But how many times are you going to have a big that's got to be able to catch the ball and make a pass over the top, right? So now you might incorporate that skill, even though it's not necessarily at the spot on the floor he's going to make that pass. But how do we be as efficient as possible? Like, for example, with perimeter players, if we're going to work on finishing, if they're standing out at the NBA three all the time, there's so much wasted space running back and forth. I spend so much time at the elbows. Like, realistically, we can make the same move at the elbow. Instead of two dribbles to get there, we're going to get there in one dribble. What we've done is we've simplified it so that we can get more reps from that standpoint. So it's like, okay, how do we have players understand their game situation, but then also just like we're working on raw skill in those segments just to get as many reps in as possible.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And yeah, like you said, I liked your terminology and game characteristics, because you know, you may not see things in that progression, but you're still going to do them. And we're trying to teach them not to think or just, yep, you know, act and just play. I think it's very important. In the coaching industry, we kind of have, you know, like we talked about, even with Rising Coaches, like it's the largest coaching tree in basketball. And we are in a space where, you know, we are friends with guys and we see them at maybe Final Fours and we connect and we utilize each other's information and learn from each other, or we go to clinics and different things. You, as a player development or in the training field, do you guys get along like with some of the top guys in the business? Do you guys steal each other's content? Do you learn from each other? Do you watch other people? Do you, you know, interact with each other? Do you bounce things off each other? How does that kind of space look like behind the scenes?
It's interesting. I mean, it's just like any other industry. You know, you look at the college coaching space or even the high school coaching space, you're going to have some of the biggest competitors are the best friends off the court. And then you have people that can't stand each other. The player development industry is very interesting because like there's so many different ways to do things. You have different, I mean, that you can have super, you know, polar opposite ideas or philosophies on how to accomplish something. And so you might have, like, I'll say this, for example, Micah Lancaster is a guy that I have a ton of respect for, from the standpoint that everything that he does, he has a reason for it. Now, he can describe what he's doing, the purpose. Now, I might not agree with his method of doing it, but I have a ton of respect for the standpoint that he can explain his purpose behind it. I think there's a lot of guys that I've talked about don't have that mentorship aspect, that they just played at a high level and now they think that they can be a player development guy and there's really no mentorship. And though that's where things get a little goofy. I think, you know, I'm friends with a lot of guys in the industry. We're talking, we're having constant communication because we're trying to better ourselves. I think it's the same thing in the coaching world. The guys that tend to stick to themselves tend to maybe be a little bit more insecure and don't have that growth mindset because they're just focused on, you know, I love social media. I hate social media at the same time. I wish I could delete my Twitter. I wish I could delete my Instagram, but at the same time, there's so much content out there that I'm watching guys like, oh, I think this is great. Like Shane Hennon is a guy from Sioux Falls, South Dakota that started working, kind of came up and I started mentoring him. And now it's gotten to the point where I'm pulling stuff from Shane. This was a guy that when he started out was coming to me for everything. We've built a great relationship. And I look at his stuff and I'm like, oh, I never thought of it that way. And so we're watching each other's stuff. We're paying attention. It's competitive, but it's also, it's different because, you know, you could be maybe recruiting a kid from St. Louis and someone else is, you know, from Washington is recruiting a kid from St. Louis. I'm not trying to go train the kid in St. Louis. I'm trying to like focus on the kids that I have here in front of me. And I'm not necessarily worried about going and getting kids and doing that stuff. But it's an interesting, everybody now has a smartphone and an Instagram and a YouTube, and it has become, I have youth kids that'll send me messages. Hey, I want to be a trainer. I'm like, you haven't even had your high school basketball career. Let's focus on playing before we focus on being a trainer, dude.
Social media is the craziest thing. Like some of the DMs that I get as a college coach are just outrageous at times. But then there's other ones that like they're very well written and I make sure I respond, even if the kid's not good enough. And like there's just so many aspects that go into it. And, you know, you utilize social media very well. Like talk a little bit about maybe, you know, plug your social media here for a second. You know, where can we find your content? What does it look like? What kind of are your motives and goals behind it? And then you talked a little bit about Steph Curry and a couple other people that you've mentioned their names. You know, where do you continue to gather your content from? And, you know, maybe one or two other guys that you really enjoyed watching. So no, that's a loaded question, but, you know, go over your social media, where you get your content and who you really like and pull your information from.
Yeah. So I post a ton of stuff on Twitter at Reed OC, and then I have a pretty large following on Instagram at Coach OC. And, you know, it's beg, borrow and steal. Right. Like you're looking for stuff that you like. I'm watching players and trying to see what they do that's effective. I'm not going to sit here and come up with this idea in my head and say, hey, Brian, I need you to go do this because I think this is going to be effective. No, I want to watch players and say, okay, what are these players doing that is super effective? And then how do I teach players to do that? I think it's fascinating. So I've had the opportunity to work with Andrew Wiggins. And Andrew's having a really good year. I think he's fourth in the Western Conference, you know, for, you know, perimeter or wings in all-star voting. It's awesome. Like I'm fingers crossed he makes the all-star team this year. And someone sent me something the other day and said, hey, I saw he made this move. And I saw you posted, you taught him this summer. I said, I didn't teach him. The reason we were working on that is because I watch film and he already does it. Like there are certain like characteristics of little things that we might tweak. But that's like the misconception, I think, a lot of the time. Like, no, we weren't working on that so I could teach Andrew that. We were working on that because Andrew already does that. We're trying to fine tune some things. And so from a content standpoint, let's watch the best players in the world. How do we break down what they're doing that makes them successful? I talked a little bit earlier about a guy like Paul Pierce. And right now, one of my favorite players to watch is Luka Doncic. And I love watching Luka. Because, and I'll say this, I was in New York in August, July or August, and I was with my buddy Adam Harrington, who's an assistant coach for the Nets. And I made the comment that I don't think Luka Doncic has ever been more athletic than the guy guarding him. And Adam chuckled and was like, that might actually be accurate, but Luka has the ability to always maintain options. And so like if people will say like, oh, so-and-so is really good at creating space. Well, I think everybody can create space. It's just, what do you do with that space once you've created it? Somebody like Steph Curry or Trae Young, players that just have such a quick trigger and can shoot it from anywhere. As soon as they have space as a defender, you're in trouble because if you don't come out of your stance to contest, they're just going to shoot it. But if you get the defender to lean, lift, or lunge out of their stance, Curry's going to be able to put the ball on the floor. Luka's going to be able to put the ball on the floor, which is why you have offensive players that are less athletic than their defender, making their defenders look silly. So that's where I fell in love with guys like Joe Johnson and Paul Pierce and Steph Curry and Luka. And it's like they have the ability to create separation. And then they're like, what are you going to do? They create space and then they just pause. If you don't lunge at me, I'm going to shoot this thing and we're going to play horse. Or if you lunge, I'm going to drop it and get to the rim and you're going to look silly. And so watching those types of players has really changed the way that I viewed the game of basketball. I pull a ton of my content just from the stuff that the NBA teams are putting out and being able to take that stuff and break it down. Then I have a ton of people on social media that send me DMs like, hey, this was crazy. I'm not really sure what he did. Can you break it down for me? And we make breakdowns that way.
Yeah, I like how you have, you know, a lot of interaction with, you know, anybody and everybody. And you've worked with all levels of basketball, you know, all the way from, you know, a guy, a potential all-star at Andrew Wiggins to, you know, the youth level and the high school level and different things. If you were to break it down, you know, as they grow up, and everybody learns at different rates and sizes and capabilities and things like, well, it would be like, hey, I'm a young kid. what is most important, because they see, you know, Curry has changed the game. You know, they're taking bad shots. I go to high school games and they're just jacking, and it's terrible. And like, they don't know how to like snap their wrists and throw a correct pass, and they don't catch it on a scissor, or they don't catch in triple threat, or any type of things that you maybe believe in. You know, what is it that, you know, two or three things that a young or up and coming, you know, middle school, high school, or even, you know, into college, that you would like, what are your big core beliefs in terms of player development of what is most important?
Well, there's a couple things. I think first, I think the most important skill that a player can have at any level is, I mean, you can say shooting, all these different things, but when it comes to like skill set and being able to be a complete player, the skill of your understanding your dribble step timing, I think, is super important. What I mean by that is, if the ball's in your right hand, it's naturally going to bounce with your left foot. So if I'm stepping left, right, the ball's going to bounce with my left foot. I'm going to step with my right foot, and then it'll bounce with my left foot again, right? If you watch any type of player that has any type of rhythm, they naturally do this when they're running, whether they're walking, jogging, or sprinting. Every single level of player, whether it's youth, whether it's professional, whatever, if they are struggling with a skill, it is generally related to their timing. They are either dribbling slightly early or slightly late. So that to me, I think, is the most important thing. Now, a lot of players naturally pick that up. I remember a couple summers ago, or last summer, working with a guy named Siani Chambers, played at Harvard, was like a 4-year starter and plays overseas. And he's super skilled, unbelievably skilled, little point guard, lefty shooter, and he couldn't figure something out. And we started talking about the timing of his dribble. I'm like, Siani, you're off on this, and it feels goofy. And we make an adjustment, and he delays that dribble, and immediately it clicks. And he's looking at me. He's like, I got it. I'm like, yeah, it was because you established your timing. You switched up your timing. Last night, I'm in the gym working with 6th grade girls with a youth program, and we're struggling with the same thing. We had girls that can't finish getting to the rim in 2 dribbles. They're taking a 3rd dribble. I'm like, well, you're stuttering your feet midway through because your timing is off, and you start to establish their timing. Next thing you know, we're working on super what would be considered advanced concepts for 6th graders. So I don't think this is advanced at all. It's just, we established our timing, and by establishing our timing, we unlocked the ability to do some of those things. And so I work with young players where, like I mentioned Shane Hennon earlier, I remember having a conversation with Shane. I said, yeah, I was working, this is probably 2-3 years ago, I was working with some 4th graders. He said, what were you doing? I said, well, I was working with underdrags. He goes, you had 4th graders doing underdrag? I said, dude, they sucked at the beginning, but we worked on their timing, and we started pushing and establishing that rhythm, and they started figuring stuff out because they understood purpose. That next thing you know, they're like, oh, well, this is way too advanced. I'm like, this isn't too advanced. It's just the timing aspect. The move isn't advanced. The timing is advanced. If we can start to establish our timing, then we're going to be able to unlock some of those things. And then finally, from, you know, philosophy standpoint, I just wrote about this on my website, talked about decision-making and talking about making good decisions versus making bad decisions. I think there's a third component to that. You have indecision. And I see so many players that just don't make decisions. The ball gets reversed to them and it's like, okay, there's a hard closeout. You either got to drive right, you got to drive left, or you got to shoot it, or you can move it. But the player that catches the ball and then pauses and does nothing, it's really difficult at that moment for you as the coach to actually coach them up because they didn't do anything. I would rather a player make the wrong decision so I could say, hey, Brian, you attacked to the left. You probably should have attacked to the right, or you should have shot it. And we can talk through why. But when there's the moment of indecision, it's really difficult to correct the decision because there is no decision. So with youth players, I think that comes back to the fear of failure. We don't want to make mistakes. We don't want to miss shots. We don't want to turn it over. So sometimes we just don't do anything. And so from a skill development standpoint, I am a huge believer in like, hey, just do something. And if it's wrong, we can correct it. And what that does is helps players make quicker decisions, but it also helps them get over this aspect of fear of failure because they're just like, I have to do something. And I understand if it's the wrong thing, at least this can be used as a learning experience. And so I'm huge on encouraging wrong decisions versus not making a decision.
I think that falls into so much, not only player development, but life. Like literally, if you can't make decisions, like some of the best leaders in the world, they're able to make you know, cut and dry decisions. If you live in that gray area or the indecision and you don't pick a side, failure, right, wrong, indifferent, like it affects you in so many levels. And, you know, you're one that's made, you know, some hard decisions in your life, you know, moving away, you know, doing different things, getting out of college coaching where you've invested, you know, like you said, basically your whole life into preparing yourself to coach or be around the game of basketball. And there's one thing that, you know, if people understood really you, you know, who is Reed Osey? And one thing that's always attracted me to you, and I respect you a lot, is the word family. And I know you have a lot that, you know, from moving to you having twins to the health of your mother, and you've talked a lot about it. And, you know, just give us a little bit about your background and the, like, what does the word family mean, and how have you utilized that word to live your best life?
No, that's a great question. So I think I mentioned this earlier. I grew up in a town of 490 people on a farm. I'm the oldest of seven kids. I have two biological sisters, and I have two adopted sisters and two adopted brothers. And so I'll be 33 here in a couple weeks, and my youngest brother, Christopher's 15. So there's a huge gap. It's been a unique experience because most of the time as you get older, your parents get older. Well, I got older and my parents got younger because we just kept adding to the family. And so I got to watch and witness my parents kind of start over, like, oh yeah, I was too young to remember how you raised me and my sisters. And now I'm getting to watch that again. And so super unique opportunity for me to be able to watch my parents do that again. And then in 2016, like July 12th, my mom, while on vacation, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and 46 days later, she was gone. Just like absolutely crazy, like sitting on the back patio talking about how, hey, you're going to come to New York in the fall and we're going to show you around. This is what, you know, see a little bit more of my life in New York City, what that looks like. And instead planning for a funeral. It was one of those moments where, you know, I really had to stop and think, like, what are we doing? And so my wife and I, living in Jersey City, New Jersey, right across the Hudson River, she's working in Manhattan, I'm working in North Jersey, and just driving all over the place. And it got to the point where Sunday night, we'd go to bed and I'd be like, all right, see you on Thursday. Because I'd leave before she got up some days, and I'd get home and she'd be sleeping. And it got to the point where we were like, okay, you know, business was really good in Minnesota, where I would fly back and forth running camps just built on, you know, the relation or based on the relationships that I had built as a college coach here. But family was so important to us, where we were just like, you know what, we're chasing our dreams. And my wife is like an unbelievable woman in terms of just like her drive and being career driven, but she's an unbelievable mother, and family is super important. We're driven in those areas to like build careers, but also like, what are we doing? Like, what's the purpose here for our lives if we're running around and not seeing each other all the time? And so that got to the point where I made that leap of faith and moved back to Minnesota to be closer. You know, my grandparents live here. We just have relationships, and it gave us the opportunity to, you know, slow down a little bit and expand. I shouldn't say slow down. That's not truthful. Gave us the opportunity to kind of just live the life that we want to live, and impact as many people as possible, and grow our family that went from 2 to 4 in March. And it's mass chaos ever since.
You know, special to hear everyone's story, and everyone's story is unique. And it just like makes you want to be a part of your journey and a part of what you're doing even more when you have, you know, stories attached to it, meaning behind it, purpose behind it, why, reasonings and all those things. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why, you know, I'm a big fan of yours, and, you know, you do things the right way. And, you know, we commend you, and we need more people like that in our world that, you know, just have each other's backs and, you know, can gamble on themselves. You know, we say a lot of times with our players, you know, potential means you haven't done it yet. You know, your future's nothing to gamble with and different things, but like, you live it, you know, and I really, mad respect for that, man, mad respect. So
I appreciate that. I, when I came up with the name Catalyst, I had a buddy who works as a medical device salesman. He said, you know, I was looking up the definition, and a catalyst is a person or event that quickly causes change or action. And I started thinking about my life. And I actually had one of the youth girls ask me last night, what's a catalyst? And that's what I want to be. I want to be a catalyst, someone that quickly causes change or action, not only in your basketball game, but I also think that basketball teaches you so much about life. There's so many life skills involved. And so if I can be a catalyst that through the game of the platform of basketball to help, whether it's youth kids or coaches, believe in themselves, be that catalyst for change in a positive way, that's what I want to be about. And that's kind of that's my entire company mission statement right there.
Yeah. So based off the mission statement, you know, as a catalyst, what would be, if you were to challenge me or challenge one of our listeners over the next 24 hours, to take action doing something, what would you kind of challenge me with?
That's a good question. Lately, I've spent a lot of time thinking about just like the psychology. I'm a big psychology guy and how we choose to think about things. I had a buddy send me over a tweet talking about there was a book titled When Prophecy Fails. It's from the 50s. And it was this crazy book about a doomsday cult that thought the world was going to end, right? So you have this black or white thing idea of the world's either going to end or it's not going to end. There's no middle ground, right? And so obviously the world didn't end. And then they studied this group of people. And what they realized through this is that they thought they'd be like, oh shoot, we messed up. Like it didn't, that's not the case. Let's go on. But what they actually realized is most of the people doubled down. They're like, oh, the world didn't end, but it's going to, and this is why it didn't, yada, yada. And I started thinking about that. Like that book was written in the 50s, but we are like that. Like as coaches, we come up with ideas and we dig our heels in. I'm guilty of it. I'm sure you are in some aspect. Like we have a way that we want to do things. And there have been times where I've been proven wrong and I have a difficult time accepting that, like, nope, Reed, you were wrong on this. And so to answer your question, like somebody's listening to this in 24 hours, take a deep dive in how you truly think about things. I think some of the most successful coaches right now that I know they really think outside of the box and they're willing to acknowledge that, hey, maybe some of the methods that I'm using, they're not necessarily wrong, but they might not be the most efficient way either. And if someone were to approach me and critique me on that, would I be open to that? And so that's something that I've really been trying to dig into myself and go, okay, if somebody came to me with proof that some of my methods weren't the most efficient, would I be willing to change? Am I strong enough mentally to be able to accept that I might be wrong? I might have failed at something and be willing to accept that for the ultimate growth on my part. So that's maybe a roundabout answer, but that's something that's really been on my mind is how often do we just double down on the stuff that we're focused on? Maybe not even intentionally, we let our egos get in the way. So that would be something that I would challenge is man, check yourself and make sure that you're in a space where you understand that, hey, growth is the most important here. Am I willing to change and adapt for the sake of growth, or am I going to be stubborn? Because some of those traits of stubbornness are good because they're going to give you confidence and they're going to help you be successful in difficult moments as a coach. So you don't want to totally extinguish that fire, but you also need to acknowledge that there are maybe some aspects that, hey, I gotta really look at this and I think I might be wrong on this.
Yeah, that ego check is hard to do as a coach at times, and you know, especially as a player too, and especially as the generations have kind of changed. People are like, oh, players are changing and coaches are changing and things are changing. Well, yeah, a lot of things are changing, but if you don't change, you're going to fall behind. Mm-hmm. And you have to continue to challenge yourself and put yourself in uncomfortable situations. And like you said, double down or gamble on yourself, or, you know, continue to leave your ego at the door, but yet not necessarily change necessarily who you are in terms of what made you who you are, because everybody you can't be somebody else. You can't change that exactly, but hey, what are one or two things that I can do to make my life better, or, you know, take a step back, give yourself time, space, and opportunity to react to something or figure out what's really happening. With intelligence, awareness, emotional intelligence, those things are like skills that no one really talks about, and, you know, goes along with that psychological aspects that you were referring to earlier. I think it's just really important stuff to like just think about. You know, thinking, especially as a head coach, like I don't think others realize how much we think. Like about just so many things that are going on and how we're going to do certain things. It's not just work, but the most exhausting part of some of the stuff we do is our thinking. You know, worst case scenarios, best case scenarios, what are we going to do here? What are we going to do there? You know, and all these things keep piling on you, and it's overwhelming at times.
Yep. Oh, 100%. I think back to when I was, when I first started, I'm in North Jersey working with DJ Sackman. And, you know, all I was thinking about is how do I grow the business? How do I, like, I was so focused on development, but I was also focused on doing what everybody else was doing. It was when Instagram went from just pictures to allowing 15-second videos. And I'll never forget being in the gym. DJ Sackman's one of the most skilled, like one of the like nastiest basketball players I've ever been around in my life. Like his a bit like he's filthy. And we would film stuff and then I would film stuff. And one day he stopped and looked at me, go, what are you doing? What are you doing this for? And I was like, completely caught off guard. Like, what are you talking about? He goes, you're a coach. You're a high level coach. He goes, can you do this stuff skill wise? Are you skilled enough to showcase this? He goes, absolutely. But the moment that you start putting this type of content out, they're going to look at you and say, well, where'd you play? Did you play at a high level? He goes, and your answer is no. So as soon as you do that, you lose credibility. Where if you are able to push yourself as being the, you know, put the message out that you're a high level coach, the question never gets asked like, oh, you know, did you play at Minnesota or where'd you play at? And you're not going to lose credibility. And I remember hearing that right away. And that stung because everything that I had put into just like dedicated this year of proving people wrong, that I got out of the coaching game, that I was going to succeed at player development. I got myself in shape. I'm doing this to then be told by my mentor, stop trying to pitch yourself as a high level player when that's not what you were. And I look back on that 6-7 years later, that was one of the most influential moments in my development. And it was hard to hear, but I look back on that. I'm like, you know what? He was right. And I totally bought into the idea of being a coach, not a former player that's now in player development. It completely changed my life by being willing to think outside of the box. And I'm thankful for that. But it goes, I know you're saying like, we're always thinking, we're trying to do what's best. We're like, the brain doesn't shut off. I don't know how many times I'm typing into my phone at 2 o'clock in the morning because something just pops into my head and I won't be able to sleep unless I write it down because I'll wake up in the morning and be like, what was I thinking about at 2:30 in the morning?
And some of your best thoughts come, you know, like at random times, you don't know when they're going to come and you got to write them down and you forget, or you hear something, or, you know, maybe it's this podcast. Maybe it's, you know, something you read. Maybe, you know, there's so many different things that you guys can, you think about and do that. But going back to what you said, there's one part that I'd like to add to it. You know, your behaviors, I say it all the time, behaviors come before your success, but like you are going to, as a person, you're going to attract people that you want to be around. I think I'm a big believer in that in recruiting. Is I'm not going to change my core values or who I am in terms of like what I believe in. And if you don't align with it, it probably is not going to work anyway. And you may be the best player or the most talented or highly ranked. Like that stuff doesn't matter. It's, you're going to attract the right people that want to work with you. You know, and you can't change, oh, I didn't play, or, you know, I look like this, or that you can do this. Like, and you don't have to prove it constantly. You just got to keep doing the work and you're going to eventually attract the people that understand what you're doing and the reason behind it and how you live. You know, nothing shows more of who you are than just watching how you live. Are you living that life that's worth, you know, repeating, replicated? You know, are you living a life that you would want recorded? Yeah. And you know, some people are and some people aren't. And it's going to catch up to people sooner or later in certain situations. But, you know, we're not concerned about those people. We're concerned about, you know, what can we do today to continue to get better and keep building our brands or, you know, our business or ourselves, or, you know, just making yourself better. I think at the end of the day is extremely important. As we kind of rally it up here and, you know, finish it up, are there any questions that I should have asked that I haven't, or that you want to talk about, or, you know, relate towards a rising coach or any of our listeners?
Well, I think one thing that pops into my head as we're having this discussion is I get asked by coaches and trainers and people that, you know, how do I climb the ladder? You know, there are some people that see Andrew, that, you know, see Andrew Wiggins or Paige Beckers or see the people that I've worked with, and they're, oh man, like you blew up. Like this is like year 15, like of being in this. There was no overnight success. It just took me 15 years. I think that there are so many people out there that get distracted by the social media aspects of thinking that things happen overnight. Like if people could only see like the me sleeping in the backseat of my car in Marinette, Wisconsin, because I wasn't old enough to, you had to be like 25 to get a hotel room in Wisconsin. And some guy tried to break into the back of my car while I'm sleeping in the backseat. Like people don't see that. People didn't see Brian Bender grinding at 3 a.m. And I hate the word grind too, and I used it again, but you like being in the office doing things to make an absolute, you know, crap money because you were just passionate about it and like not skipping steps. Like do not skip steps. We get in such a hurry to get from point A to point D, E, or F. Like B and C are points. B and C are super important. Like you need to like be present in the journey. My biggest thing that I have that has allowed me to have some of the success that I've had is that I have been about the players. Like one of my biggest frustrations as a coach, I'll never forget this. Like we got synergy and I'm like, hey coaches, I was up till 3 a.m. last night and I found a way that we can shave off like 2.5 hours each week in film watching because I found a more efficient way to do it. And I didn't care who took I didn't need the credit or I didn't need any of that. I wanted to be the best and I wanted to be fully present. And I'm like, I want to help my other assistant coach and my boss. And I want to be about these players. And then I get into player development and it's like, if I'm going to be successful, I need a product that people want to take part in. And so in order to do that, I need to help my players be successful. And just diving into this idea that, hey, I am only as good as the improvement of my players, and not skipping steps and not being so focused on the end goal, but focus on the here and now. I think ultimately the end goal, you're going to achieve that as long as you can stay present and be about the people that are in front of you in the moment.
Yeah. Number one goal is to be present. And, you know, like you've talked about, to take this thing full circle, is be present with your family, be present with your athletes, be present with your development of yourself. All of those things that kind of go into it. And, you know, going back to your story, like part of what's built by character, I had a player text me this morning, like, coach, I can't do this 8 a.m. I was like, you can't do this 8 a.m. class? Like, you can't make it to class at 8 a.m. on time? Do you really want this? Is this really what you want to do? And, you know, I try not to like bring stories back from the past and different things, but like at Minnesota, my first 2 years as a student with Tubby, we practiced at 6 a.m. We had a staff meeting at 5 a.m. I walked to the gym from my dorm or my apartment. It was cold. And I'd wake up, I'd walk, I'm like, bring it on in the cold, and walking across Minnesota's campus to get to where it was, and or bring it to the summer of Al Nolan wanted to work out at 11 p.m.
And then Dan Coleman was going to call you at 4:30
in the morning. Like, what are we doing, man? Like, but I would be there. And
Dan would call you until one of you guys answered. I have heard that.
Yeah. And, you know, it was 6 a.m. And if I didn't throw Dan Coleman a perfect pass, but, you know, all that investment in time and like those hours in the gym, I got to do what I love. And I think some days, like, we forget that. You know, we get to do basketball stuff for a living and it's our passion. You know, our worst days are still better than a lot of people's best days. And we got to remember that and be grateful for what we have. And without gratitude, like, there is no joy. And if you aren't grateful or appreciative of what you do have and what you're able to do, you know, that the joy is just taken out of it. And, you know, that every day you got to remember that as you go to work, or, you know, that we get to impact others and we got to be a part of basketball. And I think it's just something special that, you know, me and you both share that similar bond. And, you know, I thought this was a really productive conversation. I thought it was really, really effective for a lot of people if you can, you know, take the correct things. It's not necessarily Brian Bender's story or Reed Osi's story. It's, hey, you know, the life teaching points of what goes into it, and then find a way to utilize your story to, you know, better your life and better other people's lives.
Totally. I'm a big believer in sharing my story for an inspiration standpoint, that from a town of 490 people, like, I wasn't supposed to be the guy that was doing some of these things, but I didn't ever care about that. All I cared about was doing the right things and taking that small town mindset and seeing, like, can I have an impact here? Can I help just one person? And that one person turns to two, and that turns to four, and that turns to eight. And the next thing you know, you're living the life that you want to live.
Yep, definitely. Just don't skip steps along the way, right?
Don't skip steps.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time and taking the time to be on here today, and stay safe. Okay.
Sounds good. Thanks, brother.